This is The Guardian. I'm Jo Tovey, and this is the Full Story Newsroom Edition. Behind the microphone today, we have Gabrielle Jackson.
Hi, Jo. Nice to be here.
Patrick Keneally.
Morning.
And given the upheaval to the global economy, our economics editor also joins us today from Canberra. Hello, Patrick Commons.
I'm glad it takes a crisis to get me on this pod.
Well, there's nothing like a hastily announced rare primetime national address from the Prime Minister to encourage people not to panic. But that was the message from Anthony Albanese this week, even as there were clear signs the government is growing increasingly worried about fuel shortages and the bleak outlook for the global economy. A new national plan, including a swift halving of the fuel excise, was finally enacted. And then later, the government revealed $1 billion in new interest-free loans for businesses doing it tough. All that came as the US president escalated his erratic outbursts and threats towards his allies and offered fairly unconvincing assurances that victory was in sight. So, Gabs, I want to start with you. Are you feeling reassured?
What does reassurance mean in these times, Jo? Look, I might be in the minority, but I am feeling a little bit reassured, maybe not entirely down to the Prime Minister's address, but I think there has been a marked shift in the government's behaviour this week. They've recognised that this anxiety is real. They've been standing up daily. They're addressing fuel shortages. They've made some big announcements, as you just said. And I think the plan for the national address was not to give some rousing speech, but to just say, we've got this. Go have your Easter. We're not going to do COVID-era mandated things. Take it easy. Just go about your business. And I think it kind of did achieve that goal. Albanese's not a great orator, so it did look stilted. I was hoping that he would say something more definitive about the war or about Trump than he did. And I think Keir Starmer's address did better in that regard. But I also do think Australians like steady and boring, especially in a times of crisis. So I do understand the strategy.
I understand the strategy, but I'm not convinced it actually works. It felt to me like Scott Morrison, just before the COVID lockdown, standing up and saying, there's no reason to panic. You can still go to the footy. You can still enjoy yourself, catch up for barbecues. And, you know, a week later, we were in national lockdowns. And it just felt inauthentic, I think, especially the kind of almost faux folksy delivery of it, the kind of dissonance between the lack of preparation for this crisis in that we only have now, I think, 20 days of fuel supplies. And people look at a country like Japan, for example, which has 200 days of supplies, to then get up and give this kind of everything's fine, no need to panic, everything's okay, doesn't work when you have spent years failing to address the preparedness issue that a lot of experts have been warning about for a very long time.
I think there was an inherent contradiction in this address that, you know, where the signal of a national address is this is a big deal, you know, and this is a national moment that we all need to, you know, and the government's here with you. But at the same time, there's not the detail, where is this what we're going to do about it? And I think they don't want to give that detail because they don't want to freak people out anymore. They don't want to talk about restrictions, what we might have to do if we can't get enough fuel into the country. So they kind of land on this, it's a big deal, but it's okay. He had this amazing opportunity to cut through to a lot of different people. And that's the great thing about doing a national address on prime time. But I'm not sure what message it was in the end that people were supposed to hear other than it's okay, but it is a big deal.
And I think there was a big difference, as you said, Gabs, between what he said and what Keir Starmer said. Keir Starmer stepped up just a few hours after Albanese. Interestingly, he started by talking about how this is not our war. There seemed to be a really strong desire to reassure people right up front that the UK would not be dragged into this. You know, you felt the sort of shadow of the Iraq war over that speech again. He also sort of outlined their broader strategic objectives here, like not just the sort of immediate relief they would be providing to people, but that they wanted to draw their allies in Europe closer. He wasn't directly critical of the US, but that was implicit. He also said that they wanted to push on with their transition to renewables, that was more urgent than ever. You got a bit of a bigger picture. This was quite narrow from Albanese, wasn't it?
I do agree with that. And I think Keir Starmer was really smart in how he went about it. As you said, right at the top of his speech, he said, "This is not our war. We will not be drawn into the conflict. That is not in our national interest." He doesn't mention Trump by name. I think Albanese could have done something like that. And that would have been quite a popular message. You know, going to the British talks about the Strait of Hormuz with 35 countries, not including the US, is a reassuring kind of thing that got announced a few hours after. I don't know if he didn't know about it when he made his national address, but I do think that was a missed opportunity, yeah.
So the first big policy announcement we got this week was the fuel excise cut, which came as a bit of a surprise to some, as Labor hadn't seemed like they were moving in that direction only a week before. Economists take a pretty dim view of this policy. They've warned that it will only add to Australia's serious inflation problem. But on the other side, petrol prices have already come down a bit, which has obviously been pretty popular and welcome with the electorate. So I just want to unpack whether this is a good policy, and I might start with you, Pat, in Canberra. What do you think? Is it good policy? Is it good politics?
It depends how narrowly you want to think about it, I suppose, in terms of is it good policy, and then you think about, well, were there other ways that the government could have gone about this that would have been more targeted, that would have addressed the people who really needed it, then they could have done it a different way. They could have done it through job seeker support. They could have done it through more rent assistance. They could have done these things in a more targeted way that economists would have been, approved of more in a purist sense. Instead, they've gone the, kind of a more popular route of everybody gets it, and it's easy to implement, it's easy to see, and so it makes sense politically. I mean, with the fuel excise, at least if not more of the benefit goes to the top earners.
Joe Hockey's famous thing about poor people don't drive.
Don't drive. Well, and we know that's just factually incorrect, and in fact, things like high petrol prices hit poorer households, more relatively speaking than higher income. Higher income people can pay for it. So higher income people are getting support they don't need. Lower income people are not getting as much support as they do need. So policy wise, not the best. Politics, well, I'll leave it up to you guys, but I think it's probably a good move politically.
Obviously, the government was under an incredible amount of pressure on this issue. It's totemic. It's one that people can easily identify with it. They pay it every time they go and fill up the car. It's something that can be changed. The benefit of it is it works relatively quickly. In a day, we've already seen prices come down only by a few cents, but it's moving in the right direction and it immediately makes a psychological impact. The thing I would say is I think some in the government are really worried about the economic fallout of this as it continues. And people will stop spending money, they'll stop going out, they'll stop driving places, and the overall impact that will have on the economy. So as in the GFC, they said what we need to do is go early and go households. And I think that's what the government has done here as well, said it may be expensive for the government to do, but it will be popular, it will be a boost, and it will get people to continue spending and not stay at home.
Yeah, people see it quickly. I do think that it looked like becoming one of those issues that just took up all the energy in the room, and they probably thought, this is just easier for us to do it in a short period. And as Patrick said, it's very easy to implement.
There is a difficult juggle here going on, isn't there, Pat, where the government, on the one hand, they are trying to bring people's consumption of fuel down because they're worried about the supplies of that. But at the same time, they don't want people to stop spending. The fears of recession are real, aren't they?
Look, I don't think we can rule it out. It depends so much depends on what happens in the war, of course. Let's go for Westpac, for example. They now think 2 months where the Strait of Hormuz is closed, and then the supply only gets back to pre-war normal by the end of the year. But just based on that scenario, even that's pretty bad. So based on that, the forecast is that unemployment gets to about 5%. That's about an extra 110,000 Australians, more Australians out of work than would have been the case. Talking about inflation getting to 6%. Aside from COVID and the introduction of the GST, you need to go back to the late 80s to get the, inflation that high. And that's just on that scenario. So you can see where something gets worse. And then we have to start thinking about recession. But in that case, we get the Reserve Bank cutting interest rates. We get the government putting money in. So, maybe it gets us through that without a recession.
Even with the excise reduction, though, Albanese did make the point, it's still more expensive than it has been for a long time. Mm. It still gives people a benefit without making it too much of an incentive because it's still much more expensive. And we have seen traffic go down. People have stopped driving their cars.
But demand for fuel is inelastic in some areas as well. There's just no way that a tradie can stop driving around, stop using fuel. There's no way that, you know, a lot of people living in regional areas can stop driving.
I was so shocked to find out that a header of piece of farm machinery, for those who don't know what a header is, takes 1,000 litres of fuel to fill a tank.
That's right. But then again, I mean, if you wanted to target those people who really needed it, like farmers, then you could have done something along those lines as well.
So the government has also distanced itself from the Trump administration ever so slightly this week. The Prime Minister saying he wanted to see more certainty in what the objectives of the war are and see a de-escalation. But given where we're at and the President's behaviour in the last week, should we be distancing ourselves a whole lot more by now?
I think the PM came out unnecessarily early and in favour of action against Iran. He didn't need to back Trump in the way that he did. And I think that his stance has been fairly unpopular with Australians. When we do look at the polling, only a quarter of Australians are in favour of this intervention. The vast majority of Australians are against getting involved in any other way, and 65% of Australians think that we should be prioritising our relationship with other countries. So I think it's damaged his standing with the public to come out early on this in the way that he did.
And to be a bit slow in condemning some of the actions. I mean, it's quite clear now that everybody knows Trump has no idea how to get out of this war. Mm. And so they are slowly, he's made a few comments this week that is walking away from it, but I don't think clear enough.
Yeah, I mean, he's been too circumspect. And what really is driving me nuts, and is probably driving a lot of people nuts, is every time they get asked about, you know, well, what do you think about this latest thing that Trump has said or Trump has done? And they'll say, oh, we're not running. We're not going to do a running commentary. And I'm just like, come on. The whole country, the whole world is doing a running commentary. You know, we're all in this and we're all feeling it, but you're not prepared to say anything about it.
We were going to do a supercut of all the times that politicians were asked about anything to do with Iran and saying, I'm not going to provide a running commentary. No one's asking you to provide a running commentary. What we're asking you to do is to comment on a thing that's happened. Yeah.
And I think Andrew Hastie has come out looking really good and the most statesmanlike politician in Australia this week on Insiders, you know, very clearly saying what the Prime Minister should really be saying.
Yeah, it's been stark, isn't it? This has really been sort of the making of Andrew Hastie in a way, just because of his ability to sort of speak the truth of what is going on here. I heard David Marr on Radio National this week saying there was such a dignity in what Andrew Hastie said because he was just speaking plainly. He called the war a huge miscalculation. He said that even though he was pro-America, we could still be critical of bad strategic decisions. That's the kind of language that a lot of other world leaders, even allies, have been adopting, but we just have not seen politicians here talk about it. We're getting, as you say, Pat, you know, the sort of dismissive language about not providing a running commentary. Mm. I mean, this is the biggest issue in the world. It is affecting us all. It is not a crisis like COVID that has sort of come out of a, you know, uncontrollable phenomena. It is a man-made war of choice, and it has serious implications for our future and for our longer-term relationship with the US. And I think people feel like they're going a bit crazy that this government, despite the sort of very tiny steps away this week, is still unwilling to speak to us like adults.
I mean, even Greg Sheridan in The Australian this week made the point that allies of America should feel free to criticise the US actions in Iran because they are so beyond the pale. And he made the point that when politicians look like they're avoiding reality, they lose credibility too. And I think Albanese had a chance on Wednesday night in his national address, and he also had a chance on 7:30 with Sarah Ferguson to make even a slight criticism of Trump, or not even mention him, but to say full-throatedly that this war is not in the Australia's interest, and he just hasn't done it.
It's a crazy world. We're on a unity ticket with Greg Sheridan, hey? Yeah.
First time on the news.
And I think the approach will become more and more untenable as it becomes apparent how much this is going to hurt Australian and Australians. And, you know, once we start seeing the impact through the economy, you know, and we start seeing unemployment rising, we start seeing the numbers around inflation, you know, at some point, everyone's going to be, well, why is this happening? And the government will start saying, you know, number one rule, right, in politics is find someone to blame. Well, they're going to have to blame him at some point because it's his fault.
It's interesting, isn't it? This government, they went to the last election quite deftly distancing themselves from Trump and the MAGA movement. That was a real point of differentiation with Peter Dutton. And yet they seem to be drawing themselves so closely at the moment and not seeking to make those distinctions, or not very clearly. The political strategy there, given, as you say, Pat, the pain to come, is a bit strange.
Has it got to do with AUKUS, do you think? Is that why? Is this all about AUKUS and how deep we are and it's too late for us?
I think that's partly the calculation. But I think that we could still maintain AUKUS. You know, a defence official actually got up last week and said, you know, it's not a great deal, but we can't back out at this stage. And so this is the place they find themselves in. I think that they could still criticise the war in Iran and not blow up AUKUS. But I think the best thing going in the government's favour right now is how pathetic the opposition is. I mean, I thought Angus Taylor looked quite petulant in his criticism of Anthony Albanese after the address, and the stunt to hold his own national address looks a bit foolish. I think, you know, Susan Ley went too far after Bondi. She lost credibility. I think Angus Taylor needs to be really careful that he doesn't go down the same path and end up looking like a schoolyard bully rather than an alternative prime minister.
Particularly when you have someone who's articulate and thoughtful in Andrew Hastie. Not that I always agree with him at all, but it seems like there's multiple opposition leaders at the moment. You've got One Nation, you've got Andrew Hastie, you've got Taylor as well, all running different criticisms of the government. And, yeah, he seems like he's lost, and directionless.
What did you all think of Angus Taylor having his own national address?
Look, I understand why the ABC has to do it. They have to be impartial.
I mean, do they really have to do it?
Well, in the same way that they give equal time to parties during the election, I think if you're in Hugh Marks' seat, you'd be looking at it, you know, 3 minutes ahead of the news, really. Like, you just do it, I think.
But it's just so weird that you have, like, this national address, national unity, and then the next day you have the opposition leader coming up and saying, oh, that just destroying that unity. Like, what's the point of this?
I don't think that Anthony Albanese is at all worried about Angus Taylor. I don't think a lot of people even think Angus Taylor will be his opponent at the next election, the way things are going. I think a lot of the actions this week are probably a lot more driven with an eye to One Nation and the very bad news poll that we saw earlier this week indicating bad news for Labor's primary vote. You know, I'd note Barnaby Joyce was out there campaigning for the fuel excise cut and was pushing concerns about fuel pretty vocally. I think that's probably a bigger concern for Labor, is the way that that party is eating into their vote.
I did think it was interesting that Barnaby Joyce was actually the proponent of the export facility underwriting of the fuel shipment. Mm. So it's even the constructive import from opposition parties is coming from One Nation. It's not coming from the Liberal Party anymore.
Mm. Interestingly, like a line of attack we saw open up this week with Andrew Hastie going after One Nation over their support for this war. I think One Nation is a little bit vulnerable here because of the very close ties between Pauline Hanson and the MAGA movement. I think One Nation has even said they wanted us to be more involved in this war, which is obviously a deeply unpopular position to be taking. So I think we'll see that as a sort of interesting conflict playing out on the right, with both Hastie and Canavan finding new ways to attack them from the right over their closeness to the US.
One of those things was interesting in the Essential poll. One of the highest support for both Australia getting involved in the Strait of Hormuz and not being involved at all, both of those two groups were from One Nation. So the party itself or its supporters are split in their views on that.
Yeah, I guess there's opportunity there for those who are opposing them. Finally today, I just want to talk about the upcoming budget. So the Prime Minister's told the press club today that this will be the government's most ambitious budget yet. What do we think that could look like?
I think they need to be ambitious in two ways. The first way they need to be ambitious is think about what they're going to do about spending. They'll need to have something on the spending side on savings, and they'll need to make some savings because there is a feeling that is part of the inflationary problem at the moment, even though they won't say it. And then on the other side, they need to also think about what they're going to do to make the economy more productive, need to address this intergenerational inequality. The PM keeps talking about ambition and how ambitious it is going to be. it'll be interesting to see what he thinks is an ambitious budget versus what maybe Jim Chalmers would think was an ambitious budget. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting. They do need to hit a lot of targets at the same time, so it'll be interesting which ones they decide to prioritise.
The push to raise taxes on gas exports does seem to be gaining a bit of momentum, doesn't it, Patrick?
Yeah, Dan Jarvis-Barty in our Canberra Bureau has done some interesting reporting on this. And this is something which, interestingly, has not been pushed by people within the Parliamentary Labor Party. It's actually come from a lot of it, social media. There's a guy on social media, you might have seen him in your feed, called Punters Politics, who's been actually interviewed on Full Story, I think, last year.
Yeah.
He's been pushing this for a long time. And David Pocock, the Independent Senator for Canberra, has also backed this in, and I think, you know, he raised this issue in parliamentary estimates that basically beer excise raises more money than the PRRT. The gas industry disputes that. In fact, it's got so much traction at the moment. They've been taking out full-page ads in the Daily Telegraph saying, this is not true, look at how much tax we pay. But it's got to the point where I think a lot of people within Labor probably understood that we're not really getting a great deal out of PRRT and the tax treatment of offshore gas and export gas, but there wasn't really a willingness to do anything more than tinker around the edges. But I think now this kind of confluence of both a grassroots public campaign,
yeah,
a lot of support, and the circumstances, high gas prices and the war in Iran, have meant that this seems like an easy win now for the government in something that would have been incredibly controversial. And we saw what happened during the, resources rent tax and the mining tax campaign, that they had a lot of money to lobby against this. They have a lot of money to run ads, to organise events. But all of that is ineffective if you have this kind of both grassroots campaign and at the same time, gas company bringing in billions of dollars.
I think you're right. I think the fact that it is a genuine grassroots movement and it's an issue that unites One Nation supporters and Labor supporters means that it's the inevitable campaign against it from the industry, I don't think will have the same bite that it did last time round.
It's even better, it'll split the coalition too.
Well, Andrew Hastie's in support.
Yeah, it's not his job to support the last stand of neoliberalism, I think he said, yeah. Yeah.
Here. Could have written it in The Guardian 10 years ago.
Interestingly, I noted that Labor voted with the Greens to set up a parliamentary inquiry into exactly this policy, which is going to report back just before the budget, which if you were going to try and lay some groundwork for a policy change is a pretty neat way to do
it. Yeah, all the stars are aligning, I think.
I'm running on that.